Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
Your work is going to fill a large part of your life, and the only way to be truly satisfied is to do what you believe is great work. And the only way to do great work is to love what you do. If you haven't found it yet, keep looking, and don't settle. As with all matters of the heart, you'll know when you find it. And like any great relationship, it just gets better and better as the years roll on. So keep looking. Don't settle.
Great listeners, welcome back to the pod. We've got our usual guest on the show today, Danny, to give us some update on what's happening in the market currently. And if you guys haven't checked out Danny's book yet, which is Shapelicity, please do that. Even I need to read that, Danny, to be honest. But welcome to the show anyways.
Thank you, Jazz.
It's great to have you back once again.
Thank you.
A lot of tips that we look for from professional investors and the ones who are watching the markets closely, and you are definitely one of them. So where do we want to get started?
Okay, the first thing is I might just put in a little disclaimer that I'm not an official advisor, so everything that I say is my personal opinion and everybody should seek professional advice. Okay, so where I started, we've just gone through the third quarter in share markets, and I just thought I'd give everybody a little bit of a rundown about what happened, because it gives some good, interesting trends that have come out of both the US and Australian share markets. And in essence, even though I'll start in the US because it is the elephant in the room, and at the moment, you know, the classic case is if the US catches or sneezes, everybody else catches a cold. So in the third quarter, NASDAQ was the star outperformer, even though it retraced some 5% in September, it was up over 11%. The S&P 500, which is a broader representation of the US economy, although still has a heavy weighting to tech shares, and it has 20% weighting to financials, was up about 8.5%. And the Dow, which is the top 30 companies, but that's done on a price perspective, they reorganized the Dow. And obviously, you had Apple having a 4-for-1 split, and they took out ExxonMobil and put in the software company Salesforce. That was up 7.6%. Broadly speaking, Australia sort of followed suit, although we were a laggard. The ASX 200 was down 3.7%. in the third quarter, but the stark outperformers was the IT index up 12.8%, and no surprises, the banks and the energy sectors were all down. So banks down about 7% and energy down 15%. So there's a very clear trend that's been going on here. We've had a very crowded trade in the technology shares, in the disruptions, the digital space. And the real laggards have been, for want of a better word, have been what we call the value cyclical stocks, which is the likes of the energy, the banking sector, the traditional industrial stocks in the US. And this continues to be this ongoing heated debate about what is going to happen going forward. Clearly, we've got so many different issues, though, at the moment, Jazz, going on. The US market with Trump tweeting forensically, changing his views on everything, and obviously suffering from COVID has thrown so many spanners in the works. But I'll try and go through some of the issues. At the moment, the greatest threats to share markets is really internationally is another ongoing wave in COVID that is starting to emerge in both Europe and obviously the USA. And the president's POTUS's position on COVID is obviously highly politicized, but probably doesn't help the country in terms of the ongoing spread and transmission of the disease. Clearly, all economies at this stage need stimulus. This is the biggest problem. Overnight, we've had the budget in Australia and we've had a positive reaction from the share market. I'll come back to that. Mm-hmm. But focusing on the US, the most probably important thing that has happened recently is that the major stimulus package that both the Democrats and the Republicans have been negotiating on has come to nothing and was dead in the water overnight thanks to Trump. That's not, you know, that's just Trump's political, you know, stance rather than me criticising him. I think going into the election, you're going to continue to see this argy-bargy going on in the US, and as we touched on in last month's podcast, the real focus of probably of share markets at the moment will be on this November 3rd election in the US, and it's creating a lot of volatility in share markets. Mm-hmm. I'll go through some of the details on that, but the most important thing, if we can look past that election, there is no way that the US Congress cannot approve some form of stimulus. Okay, so Congress is both the House and the Senate. Mm-hmm. And as you know, that the Senate is controlled by the Republicans and the House is controlled by the Democrats. And they, whoever gets in power is going to have to stimulate the US economy, because continuing to suffer from large unemployment levels, more states, more communities, more counties are going to have to be shut down as they go into winter, unfortunately, and the pandemic spreads. So if we can look past the election, I think, like Australia, like Europe, you are going to see more fiscal stimulus. And you heard Jay Powell overnight just reiterating that there is only so much that the Fed can do at this point in time. It has to come from the politicians, which is, of course, what we have seen overnight in Australia with the big spending $100 billion budget here in Australia. Mm-hmm. And clearly the share market in Australia has responded positively to that, although I think because they're focusing on a number of issues over here, infrastructure, tax write-off or tax cuts, and the like, but I still think there is a question mark in Australia as well about putting money into the hands of the people once the job seeker and job keeper programs tail off at the end of March. It continues to be, this recession was very much forced upon people, obviously because of the health crisis, but the biggest problem is that it's maintaining the level of demand in our economies. And the reason why demand struggles is because people don't have money to spend. Mm-hmm. So there's a few question marks, obviously, about the tax cuts here in Australia, all well and good, but are those people in the higher tax brackets actually going to spend the money? Is it going to trickle down? Mm-hmm. Or are they actually going to pay off their mortgages, pay down their debt and sit on their savings? So whilst I think we're seeing the short-term reaction in the Australian share market today, and obviously very positive in comparison to what happened in the US overnight, I remain, let's say, just a little bit cautious on the Australian economy and this level of unemployment that's running at about 8%. So I think going forward, we all have to realise that Citigroup said it really well. I picked up on a quote that's come in overnight. From tech to COVID worries, what started off as a sell-off in tech stocks has ended in fears of further economic malaise as COVID infections have surged across the globe. And we're not out of the woods yet. There is question marks. We've had a V-shaped recovery in particularly the US stock market, a little bit as well here in Australia. But there are starting to be signs that economic activity is slowing in the US. And the question then becomes, you'll hear lots of people talking about what type of recovery it is in the US. Is it going to be a W, as in, you know, we recover and then we fall again and then we resurge? Is it going to be a K? Is it going to be a swoosh, the Nike swoosh? And you could find that you have initial pickup, you then have a little bit of a fall off again as we go into this election period and all this period of uncertainty, and then things start to pick up as you get some confidence in who is going to be in charge. And whilst Australia and the Australian market will try and differentiate itself from what's happening in the US, I think investors need to recognise that we do tend to follow suit in terms of their performance. You've seen how the indices generally move in the same way. So if you see a switch to value and growth stocks in the US because there is an expectation that there's a big fiscal stimulus coming in the US, which is a huge driver of world growth, then you will see a similar switch here in Australia.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. There's a few things over there. One, Danny, doesn't matter who wins the election, is it fair to say that there is a lot more stimulus coming both in the monetary side and the fiscal? Or
yeah, well, I think we need to just have a quick look at the US election because I think it's very important. Mm-hmm. It's obviously incredibly contentious, goes without saying. So just to put some facts in here. The election is on November the 3rd, but the postal votes don't have to be in until November the 15th, okay? Mm-hmm. So there is all these question marks in terms of how many postal votes are going to come in, and the postal votes will come into the picture if it's a highly close election. So let's say Biden wins outright. There is such a surge and support, then these postal votes will probably be largely immaterial because mm-hmm. there is an expectation that the Democrats are going to have more postal voting. Mm-hmm. In terms of HSBC did a survey of Australian fund managers, and for what it's worth, the majority, 27%, thought that the results of the US election would not be known for 10 days. Mm-hmm. Now, in the case of Al Gore and George Bush, I think it was even longer. It was out to December of the 14th or something. So mm-hmm. I think investors need to be prepared that there could be a volatile period. At the moment, the polls are saying Biden is going to win, and he seems to have improved his standing over the last week between the tax issues for Trump, the debate, which didn't go well for him, and his stance on COVID. Mm-hmm. Looking through all of that, what does it mean if you have a Biden or a Trump win? The first point that I've picked up on is that it's almost more important about who controls Congress if one party can get control, because obviously that was the biggest problem particularly for Obama, because he didn't have the Senate. If there is a complete sweep and you find either party gets the Congress, then obviously the policies that the president has in place, assuming he wins as well, will have a bigger effect. The main concerns are, so Trump, it's basically going to be business as usual, more deregulation, more tax cuts if they can find any, and probably an acceleration in acrimony and the trade wars. Okay. Mm-hmm. The perception is, well, it's not a perception on the Biden front. He's probably going to look to increase taxes, particularly on the wealthy. Interestingly, a lot of billionaires have been calling for that. But of course, nobody likes more taxes. He will probably have a bigger stimulus bill. I think $3 trillion has been mentioned. And it will be very much focused on infrastructure and decarbonisation. He has a very, very strong stance mm-hmm. in trying to wean the US off fossil fuels. There is also probably a greater push from the Democrats in terms of the antitrust legislation on some of the big tech companies, mm-hmm. although I'm not convinced that they will necessarily get that through, nor am I convinced that it'll necessarily be bad for the companies. Mm-hmm. In terms of trade wars in China, the Democrats also have quite a firm stance, but it probably will not be as hyperbolic in terms of the rhetoric. Mm-hmm. So there's some of the key features. Wall Street, from what I can understand, is kind of expecting that Biden is going to win. You're already seeing it in some of the green technology stocks over there. They're mm-hmm. experiencing quite a rush of exuberance into them. And the polls are suggesting that. But as we all know, yeah. everyone was flummoxed in 2016. So I think the only thing you can assume between now and November and possibly December is volatility. And if it's a very big what we call risk-off event where investors get scared, you can expect the US dollar to strengthen and for them to buy the 10-year treasuries.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the markets should be pretty much within the range up until the election results are clear, I guess.
I think the consensus view, and it's probably what I'm going to do, you have to select your favourite shares or the ones that you feel you'd like to buy more of, and you probably buy into this dip because I think it's a dead certainty that the stimulus packages to support economies is not going away anytime soon. Mm. So that is that perspective. Australia, just a couple of other themes. If we have a look at the markets, the big risks are obviously the election being contested. It's another wave, rising COVID cases. On the other side of the coin, it's this vaccine. When is the proverbial vaccine going to appear? And I was listening to someone who we were discussing earlier, Chamath, who we can't pronounce his surname, over in the US, who's a billionaire, highly successful investor who often appears on CNBC. And his view is that, and he was referring only to the US, is that to scale up a vaccine to 300 million plus people in the US, they really can't expect it until possibly late 2021 or 2022. Mm. And obviously there's some question marks around the efficacy of the vaccines, how often you would have to take them. So whilst there can be a sugar hit to share markets, if this vaccine comes through from AstraZeneca or Pfizer or one of the others, I think everyone needs to bear in mind that it's one thing to have a vaccine, it's a completely different thing to roll it out to the populace and actually get people having the confidence to go and behave how we did pre-pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Is there? Do you see any concerns with the insolvencies or bankruptcies coming up early next year or post-election, or that's not a concern?
I think it's a real risk clearly it's a risk now in the US because their payments have been already cut. And I think it is a real risk for Australia as well in March. I am cautious about buying retailers for that one reason. They've done incredibly well. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be racing in there. But if the government sees that everything's going to slow down, they kind of have their hands forced. I mean, it's almost like even though they're fiscally conservative, they don't want to spend the money. Mm-hmm. They're really, really hoping that this whole tax cut thing is going to create a trickle-down effect. Mm-hmm. And I think the jury's out about whether that's going to work. So my position in terms of holding shares in Australia, I'm still very much, I've got a bit of a mix going on. I don't really like the banks. I still think they're fundamentally challenged, but don't underestimate the government trying to stimulate the housing sector. Mm. And I think the banks, if there's any indication of a reopening trade with a vaccine, any signs of inflation, a big stimulus package in the US, you will see the likes of the banks start to perform. But my concern is that longer term, their business models are fundamentally challenged by disruption and lower for longer interest rates. Mm-hmm. I really think we're all underestimating how long rates are going to remain low. Mm-hmm. I remain positively disposed towards the materials companies. So I'm talking the likes of Fortescue, BHP, less so Rio. Mm. I think that China is probably going to continue to be a very active consumer of iron ore and one of our biggest clients. The whole question about Vale over in Brazil and about starting up full production, etc., that's still supporting prices a little bit. But from what I could pick up from the stockbrokers, most of them are forecasting iron ore prices to remain over $100 a tonne. I think because Australia is quite lucky at the moment that we don't have COVID, I think you are going to see probably better performance with some of the travel stocks. So the Sydney airports, the Sea Links, maybe some of the tourism stocks. I think Ardent Leisure has done quite well. Mm-hmm. Ditto the gaming and casino stocks, the likes of Star Entertainment Group, possibly Tabcorp, although I haven't looked at that, and Aristocrat Leisure. Mm-hmm. I still think investors should be relatively defensively positioned. You can look at having exposure to probably more the defensive consumer durable stocks, so Woolworths, Coles, likes of Wesfarmers. Transurban still probably looks interesting if economic activity starts to pick up here. What else am I missing? I'm a bit cautious on some of the retail stocks like JB Hi-Fi. I'm not a fan of Harvey Norman. Nick Scali clearly has done really well. Temple & Webster, Baby Bunting, that whole stay-at-home, work-from-home phenomenon and people investing in their houses has done incredibly well. But I think we all need to understand that immigration levels have collapsed in Australia, and that's not going to be underpinning the easy economic growth that we've had in the past here in Australia. I like the healthcare stocks still. A lot of them have not maybe performed as strongly. They've kind of performed a little bit better than the market. And the likes of, ironically, if you get a vaccine, the likes of the Ramseys, because they're private healthcare operators, ResMed, CSL, blood plasma, more people will go and be able to give their blood plasma. And ResMed will probably be beneficiaries, but it may not manifest itself as quickly as some of the other reopeners. Trades.
Mm-hmm. Now, you and I were talking just before the recording about gold and silver in general. Any thoughts on the mining stocks in that space?
I don't really follow gold miners. They're not my thing. They're too cyclical for me. And I do hold some of the gold ETF. So I think it's GOLD in here in Australia and GLD over in the US. And that's just as a hedge. There's a whole lot more risk that you have when you start buying gold miners. Obviously, they can do incredibly well, but they can have production problems, production shortfalls. It just is a layer of risk that I'm not predisposed towards, basically, Jazz. So I'll let everybody, you know, go and do their own research on those ones.
Also, Trump signed an executive order giving importance to the rare earth metals are a strategic play.
Yep.
With China obviously controlling the market.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts in that space?
Well, I'm a big fan of Tesla and I also own the shares. So there you go. I've held them for quite a while now. Look, it's absolutely right for a lot of the new technologies. Rare earths are incredibly important, but it's a very difficult place to invest in. Mm-hmm. Most of it is in China. What I did do before the podcast was have a look for some of your listeners. So in Australia, Linus is the big one and its share price has been doing very well. But, you know, they've had a lot of problems in the past, which they now seem to be resolving. Mm-hmm. In terms of ETFs, there is one in the US run by VanEck called REMX, and it's listed in the US, and that will give you exposure to global rare earth companies, including those in China. And obviously, Linus, I think, is quite a large stake in that one.
Mm-hmm.
I really couldn't come up with a lot more than that. Suffice to say, it's the lithium space is interesting, the nickel space is interesting, the rare earths is interesting. Elon Musk announced at Battery Day that, you know, he's now signing deals with or longer dated contracts with lithium suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
He is also looking to do his own lithium sourcing in Nevada. Mm-hmm. He also is trying to decrease the reliance on cobalt, and he is also signing contracts, I believe, or discussing with BHP and also the Indonesian government in terms of nickel. Now, I think everybody has to understand to transition away from oil, etc., and the development of batteries and clean batteries at the right price. There is huge demand, as well as in other tech products, for the likes of these rare earths and the other metals and minerals.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I think it's a much riskier space to play in. I think if you want exposure, to that type of change. I've got some other ETFs for your listeners. Mm-hmm. So ARK Invest, Kathy Wood, who's very well known, has an ETF fund, mm-hmm. and it's ARKK, and that is their innovation fund, of which Tesla is probably their largest shareholding. It's been a very good performer. Mm-hmm. There is then a clean energy ETF in the US called TAN, T-A-N, which gives you exposure to a lot of the solar technologies mm-hmm. there. If you're looking for, there's another one that was nominated called PIC, P-I-C-K, but to tell you the truth, it's large metal and mining companies, ex gold and silver, and that was a lot of BHP and Rio. So mm-hmm. we can all buy those in Australia, so I kind of give that one a miss. Mm-hmm. And then a sector that another ex-client of mine / friend recommended is Global Robotics, again listed in the US, and it's called Robo, R-O-B-O. Mm-hmm. There's also a bit of a bubble going on in the US in hydrogen and green hydrogen stocks. Mm-hmm. So don't underestimate if there is a Biden win, although our politics is not as disposed towards the green energy space in Australia, I think it has to be emphasised that what's going on in Europe and the UK and the US, even without Biden, and China is really moving forward at such a pace. And I think what we have seen in the last quarter, not only the oil price looking very, very sad and sorry for itself, and that's in part because of COVID, mm-hmm. but you've also seen two major players, BP and Shell, actively saying that they are going to transition away from oil. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I didn't touch on is the Reserve Bank's probably going to cut interest rates on November the 3rd. Mm-hmm. So it's a big day. It's the Melbourne Cup for those of you that like horse racing. Mm-hmm. The RBA meets, and it's expected that they will drop the cash rate to 0.1 from mm-hmm. 0.25. They'll probably announce that they're going to continue to buy bonds, three-year Aussie bonds and long-dated treasuries, mm-hmm. okay, to keep interest rates down. The bottom line is that we're really in a position, unless we want economies to collapse, you know, it's the governments around the world, in my opinion, are going to continue to have to stimulate. And lower for longer interest rates, I don't know, inflation, there was a little pockets of inflation in the US in timber prices because housing has been very strong over there. Mm-hmm. You're seeing people moving out of cities and wanting to relocate. You're seeing a similar trend here in Australia. Mm-hmm. But I'm not convinced that we're going to have breakout demand-related inflation or huge wage inflation at this point in time. Mm-hmm. Our biggest problem is on the demand side. People don't have enough income to go and spend. Mm-hmm. So I remain of the position that unless governments come in and support economies with the second or third waves that are going to come through, yes, of course, the share markets will react very poorly to that. Mm-hmm. Because this is not a recovery like every other recovery we've had in the past, and mm-hmm. that's what people have to understand. It's the simple old levers that were pulled, that's why there is fiscal stimulus in the likes of infrastructure, mm-hmm. is to try and get people employed. Unemployment is very, very high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll be interesting, actually. I think RBA's target for next year, from memory, was to hit an inflation target of 2.2 or 2.3, just under 2.5, and US had a target of 1.7-ish, from memory. So it'll be interesting to see whether they can actually hit that target or not. I'm of the
always opinion take that those targets with a big pinch of salt. They're economists.
Fair enough. What sector is your personal favorite for 2021?
I still think the reflation trade, the value stocks are going to, the cyclicals are going to struggle. They may have a reappearance for a while, but I still very much am positioned in quality growth stocks in both Australia, with a little bit of a difference. So you see, Australia, it's a little bit harder to get that exposure. So in Australia, for example, I like certain property REITs, although they're a bit expensive, like Goodman Group and Charter Hall. Mm-hmm. A mix of income from the likes, I think I mentioned to you, of Woolies, Wesfarmers, Coles, the healthcare stocks. Really, nothing much has changed from when I wrote my book. I still have a similar positioning, which you buy quality companies that might be a little bit expensive, but they can have growth. I think you could see some of the tech stocks heavily sold off in the US at some stage. But again, I'd probably be adding to certain positions over there, or looking, let's say, the likes of a new one called Snowflake, which is a data analytics company. I mean, it was a crazy IPO that is so ridiculously expensive. And I haven't touched anything like that. But, you know, if somebody wants to sell it down, I might have a look at it. So I really haven't changed my views. I still think that disruption, e-commerce, the digital transformation, AI, all those big secular themes are going to continue to dominate over the next few years.
One of the big reasons for RBA to be looking at the rate cut is obviously currency. How do you think that will impact the bond market, the rate cut specifically, and if that will have any follow-on effects?
It doesn't work that way. It usually works the other way, Jazz. So the bond market will drive the currency market. So if anybody wants to look at what's going to go happen in markets, you have to look at the 10-year Treasury bond, because that will be the biggest, which is a point that I wanted to mention in this podcast, that is the biggest driver of equity markets, the US dollar, et cetera. It's a real problem for central banks, because when the US is creating so much liquidity, it's great for the US dollar, it weakens, but it obviously then reflates everybody else's currencies, and that's including the euro. The Aussie dollar is strong, yes, because we have a large exposure to iron ore, and that's been very, very strong. And the worst thing for global economies is to go into these currency wars, and that's a big problem. The election in the US, if you do see a risk-off event, the US dollar will continue to strengthen and people will be buying the 10-year bond. But really, at the end of the day, the Reserve Bank, from what I understand, is going to come out and explicitly state that they're going to control the yield curve. So you can only, there's only so much they can do with the Aussie dollar. It's very, very tricky. And it's one of the problems for Australia that has continued to undermine our manufacturing sectors and the like. I think it's the Dutch syndrome, because we have this exposure to a commodity that China just can't get enough of. And it's a real structural problem that I think we need to solve, because one day China may not be such a big buyer.
What, according to you, not that we really, anyone's got a crystal ball, but according to you, is the solution to keep currency in control?
There isn't a lot you can do. That's the bottom line. You know, there's only so many levers that the Reserve Bank has, apart from intervention and selling Aussie dollars, which obviously you have seen in past currency crises. Central banks come in and try and control their currencies, but that's on a road to nowhere as well.
So really the big one was the interest rate cuts normally.
Correct. And the Reserve Bank has been really specific, because at 0.1%, we have negative real interest rates in this country. I think this is what people are missing. Even with low levels of inflation, we have negative interest rates. But it doesn't do a lot if people don't have the income to go out and borrow and spend. That's the whole point. And I think the government's budget is very much focused on trying to get confidence back into the business sector to go out and spend. And that is creating demand in the private sector. So the levers are, you have demand created through public sector expenditure, or they've given these asset write-offs for companies to go out and spend. But companies need to be confident that there's demand down down the train for that. So as I said, my personal view is that we're not going to know how this budget pans out for a few months yet. But again, I think you will see the federal government having to come to the party to provide more money in people's pockets because employment may not pick up that quickly. I did pick up on Twitter a few people were very upset about, I think there's a $500 cash handout. Mm-hmm. And if those that are old enough to remember that in the GFC, people got $900. So 500 doesn't get anybody anywhere at the moment. So it's very difficult. It all comes down to driving up employment, and not just casual part-time employment. But a lot of these are real structural problems for economies across the globe, and probably a topic for another time.
One thing that we haven't even touched on is a possibility of a civil war within the US.
Oh, my gosh. Well, hopefully we're not going to go to a civil war. Let's just put it that way. From my understanding, the army is not going to support anything of that nature. Last time Trump tried to call in the army, they said no. And if you don't have the army on your side to create this, but, yes, clearly it's been an incredibly divisive presidency. And I think it's very sad to watch.
Look, Danny, thanks for jumping on the show. Anything else that you would like to add before we start wrapping it up?
No, I just think anybody looking at the share market, the best advice is to do your research, find your favorite, find the stocks that you want to buy, and realize that there could be some good buying opportunities over the next few weeks. And you don't have to put all the money in all at once, and you can dip, you know, your toe in. But I still remain positively disposed towards shares, and would be a buyer on weakness.
Awesome. To the listeners, none of this is financial advice. So please do your own research. Thanks for that, Danny, and we'll catch up soon again, I guess.
Yep, great. Thanks very much, Jazz.